when an individual should be developing the ability to start thinking for themselves? Is there a necessary timeline on that? I don't believe so. I think that's kind of open-ended to however somebody develops tools, coping skills, whatever you want to call it. Some people refer to it as God consciousness or the ability to, you know, weigh the pros and cons of a situation and make healthy decisions by themselves. You know, in the beginning, we need a coach to help us with that.
You're listening to Real Recovery Talk with your host, Tom Conrad. Every day, Tom helps guide people like you who have loved ones dealing with addiction. You're most likely frustrated with the situation, worried your loved one won't get better, and concerned you're not doing enough to help. This show will help you understand the tremendous struggle of addiction from your loved one's perspective. You'll hear stories of recovery, which will give you hope. And you'll understand the limits to what you can and can't do to help those you love. Tom is a certified addictions counselor who's successfully winning his own battle with drug addiction and alcoholism and has helped many others win theirs as well. It's time now for Real Recovery Talk.
Here we are, Real Recovery Talk. I am your host, Tom Conrad. In today's episode, we have Benjamin
Booth. What's happening, everybody? Beautiful day here.
I feel like this is like my intro is on autopilot. Like I should just record that part and put it in every week rather than having to say it.
I think I say the same thing every time too. We need to get fresh, change it up.
That's right. All right. First thing is first, go to realrecoverytalk.com. There you will find every single episode that Ben has ever released and myself have ever released. And what's cool about the website is if you're not familiar with podcast players and stuff like that, I mean, you can go to the website and every single episode's there and you just click play. Or if you know how to listen to podcasts, but your grandfather doesn't know and you find an episode that he would be interested in hearing, you can just send him right to the website. And it is realrecoverytalk.com. And you can also contact myself at tom@realrecoverytalk.com and ben@realrecoverytalk.com. Send us an email and we will get back to you momentarily. That is it. Here we go. All right. So in today's episode, what we want to discuss is we see when people get into recovery, when they get sober, we do this thing called getting a sponsor, and the sponsor has a specific job to do. And the purpose of this episode is to discuss at what point are we as the newly sober people able to start making decisions for ourselves? And what sparked this is Ben and I come across quite a few people that they get in this position where they're so accustomed to bouncing ideas or bouncing questions off of their sponsor or their sober supports, and they are unable to make any decisions for themselves. Though that makes sense in the beginning, there does come a point in time where it becomes almost detrimental to our sobriety. Would you agree, Ben?
I agree with that. And I think that there's definitely exceptions to the rule. I don't want to come out and say that this is a black and white, but it's something that I've definitely seen evidence of. You know, and again, opinions may run to extremes on this one. You know, you got some, we're not the end-all be-all, basically, on this topic. I just kind of wanted to share some of my experience and what I've seen. I mean, at this point, Tom and I have had the opportunity to literally work with, thousands of people through the treatment process. Therefore, we're exposed to a lot of different situations. We get a lot of feedback from clients that are like, hey, I asked a guy to be my sponsor. This is what happened. Or, hey, I've had this sponsor for a while, and this is what's going on. You know, and we're kind of like a sounding board a lot of time. And, you know, my go-to the majority of the time, a vast majority of the time, is go by what your sponsor tells you, because that's a huge part in recovery is just being willing to take the suggestion to begin with. But, you know, I'm with Tom. I do think that there's a point in time when an individual should be developing the ability to start thinking for themselves. Is there a necessary timeline on that? I don't believe so. I think that's kind of open-ended to however somebody develops tools, coping skills, whatever you want to call it. Some people refer to it as God consciousness or the ability to, you know, weigh the pros and cons of a situation and make healthy decisions by themselves. You know, in the beginning, we need a coach to help us with that. And don't get me wrong, there's certain aspects in my life where I absolutely pick up the phone. I had a situation going on a few weeks ago. I literally called five people that I knew, told them what was going on in my life. And these are people with solid recovery, years of recovery, lots of experience, and said, here's what's going on in my life. Here's what I kind of think I should be doing about this situation. What's your thoughts on that? And four out of the five people gave me the same suggestion. Like, I do double check myself on this stuff, you know? But.
And you're coming up on 10 years sober,
yes,
right?
Sir. Yes, sir.
So here, I mean, we have somebody that's coming up on 10 years sober that still utilizes his sober supports to bounce ideas off of and bounce questions off of. But in the end, I mean, you're able to make decisions for yourself, which is, I think, you know, some people, unfortunately, they get so enmeshed with the idea that I have to run every little thing by my sponsor or by my sober supports that they get to the point where they can't think for themselves. They can't make decisions for themselves. And we hear people a lot of the times talk about, oh, AA is like a cult, which is not true. It's not like a cult. But if you get to that point where you can't make a decision for yourself or you can't think for yourself and everybody around you does all your thinking and decision making for you, I would say maybe you're part of a, you know, some, because the reason that I say that is because the people that do feel like they are able to make those decisions for you and they are able to do that thinking for you, if you have whatever X amount of sobriety, a couple years, 5 years, 10 years, and they feel like they still have that control over you or they still feel like they need to make those decisions for you, I do think that's kind of cultish.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely with you on that point. You know, I was actually talking with a sponsee of mine the other night, and he basically was telling me about his old sponsor. And everything that I've heard, he had a phenomenal sponsor. You know, this is a gentleman, the guy that I'm sponsoring now, he actually has 5 years sober, and we're midway. He wanted to go back through the steps with somebody else, have a new experience. But everything that I've heard about his sponsor and seen through the demonstration of his principles has been great. But, he told me about an instance where he finally called his sponsor when he had a few years sober to bounce something off of him. And his sponsor's response was, for the first time ever, you know, he was explaining this to me, I don't think you need to be asking me this question at this point. I think this is something you could take to God and figure out for yourself. Why don't you give that a go? And, you know, to be honest with you, I got to give that sponsor props, like, for giving somebody the opportunity to have an experience for themselves and practice. And maybe they screw it up, maybe they don't, you know, but it's pretty interesting, because I personally have had experiences too where, you know, where I talk to my sponsor and, you know, I tell them, hey, yeah, how's the week been, you know, and I'm, oh, it's been kind of a tough week, a lot going on, nothing absolutely detrimental falling apart. And my sponsor's response was, well, it sounds like you should have called me. I'm like, well, I don't want to make mountains out of molehills either. Like, life is tough. I want to talk about, like, the progression of this, though, too. I think it's really important to start from, you know, in early recovery, why somebody should be bouncing so much off of other people, because I think that's important. You know, in the beginning, newly sober people, what's the word when you just do things quickly? I always draw a blank.
Impulsive.
Thank you. You know, our brains are still recovering from vast amounts of artificial neurotransmitters being released, you know, and usually, you know, our brains haven't balanced out yet. We're super impulsive. You know, we do make unhealthy decisions. A lot of times clients, sponsees, newcomers, they're unable to recognize their own risky behavior, so to speak.
Give an example of when this took place for you. Like, give an example of, say, when you were bouncing ideas off of everybody and why.
I gotcha. So, think of an example. Actually, if I could use an example of somebody I just talked to yesterday, again, like we've worked with thousands of people. We had an individual that last night, in fact, at a group, I wasn't the one facilitating the group, but I was still at the office. We had a group facilitator, and this individual's coming in and out of the group saying that they are upset, you know, and they don't like the topic. And when it was explained to me, because I wasn't actually in the room, like very quickly, I'm able to identify the fact that this individual heard some truth from the group facilitator and from the group, and they didn't like hearing it. And it was something that they couldn't recognize for themselves. So their way of, you know, basically reacting to it was, well, I'm going to march out of group and nobody can stop me. But when I was able to sit down with this individual outside, it was like, hey, have you looked at it like this? Is there a possibility that you don't recognize the risky behavior that you're partaking in based off of the topic that they were talking about that upset her to begin with? And it's situations like that, coming back to my saying that Tom hates, can't spot self-deception by yourself. You know, if you're lying to yourself, how do you know? If you're not able to identify your own risky behaviors, we need other people to point it out to us. You know, and I think that's just to go to my own experience, like I've made every mistake in the book. I got in a relationship in early recovery that didn't work out. Met a girl in the halfway house. She had more time than me. I thought she was going to teach me how to be sober. I didn't sit back and say, this girl has had to stay in the sober house for over a year. There might be something really wrong with her. You know, instead I was like, ooh, look at this. She's going to show me how to do it. I thought it was a good decision. It was not. I should not be dating somebody that's in a halfway house, you know?
So I think that it's important to state that when somebody's in treatment, they have therapists, they have the treatment team, they have everybody that kind of rallies around them, the community too, like their peers that can really help reinforce somebody's decision-making process and it being good or bad. But the thing is that the client themselves has to be open to and be okay with allowing that stuff to happen. You know, and that I think is where a lot of people miss the mark. They are closed off to the idea of taking suggestions from other people and listening to their therapist or the clinical team or whatever the case is. Now, let's talk about just a second. Let's say somebody doesn't even go to treatment. They don't have a therapist, but they have a sponsor. I mean, from what I gather and, you know, working the steps myself and being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the beginning, I had a sponsor to take me through the 12 steps of AA. And taking me through the 12 steps of AA, although I think back in 1935, it was just to take somebody through the steps. And they probably just did that. But let's fast forward to 2020, almost 100 years later. And I feel like sponsorship has kind of morphed into something more than that. And Ben and I, it's very obvious that we disagree with some of these things, but a sponsor's responsibility is no longer just taking somebody through the steps, because a sponsee is calling with just about everything. Hey, should I go out on a date with this girl? Hey, should I go to this get together that my parents are having and I know that there's going to be drugs and alcohol there? Should I go to my buddy's 21st birthday party? You know, should I, you know, financial decisions, sponsees are bouncing off of sponsors and stuff like that, which is, I think, is very important. But it's not just taking somebody through the steps anymore. It's morphed into a lot more than that. And I think that is where a sponsee can develop that almost codependency on a sponsor to feel like they have to bounce everything off of them. And that, unfortunately, can last for many, many, many years.
I think it's funny you brought up the girlfriend thing, because I do see this pretty often. And this is more so with individuals that I know in the program who have several years sober. And they end up, say, for instance, dating a girl that they're, you know, let's say this individual has 3-4 years sober. They end up dating a girl that their sponsor doesn't approve of. You know, at the end of the day, you can't deny somebody their experience. And really, how would a sponsor know whether or not someone was the right – at 3 or 4 years sober, like you eventually – if it's not the right girl, in that case, you got to let somebody hit their head and learn from their experience. Would somebody go back out over that? I would hope at 3-4 years. No. So I get it, but like I've literally seen cases where sponsors are telling people to dump their girlfriends. Oh, you need to go dump your girlfriend. Like I've and literally it does more harm than good because the individual gets so wrapped up in what their sponsors tell them. They catch a resentment towards their sponsor. They're worried about pleasing their sponsor. Then they're worried about the girlfriend. You know, oh, you listen to your sponsor too much. Like, and it creates a world of chaos rather than just the live and let live. I wanted to touch on the progression of hopefully what it should look like, or what I think it looks like for me and being able to make my own decisions. So when I first got sober, I would straight up ask my sponsor, my sober supports, my therapists, my family members, like, hey, I have this situation going on. What feedback should I get? You know, and that's the first 6 months, year. I don't know. I hate putting timelines on it because really there's no timeline. But then it should progress into, hey, I have this situation going on. Here's what I think I should do about it. What do you think about that? As opposed to just completely open-ended at first. What do I do? To here's my idea of what I should do about it. Do you think that sounds about right, Tom? Okay. So now you're starting to come up with your own solutions to your own problems and making sure that your thinking and your solution is good. You're bouncing that off of people. And eventually you do that long enough and it should progress into I can start making some healthy decisions by myself because I have experience doing so. But also going back to the fact that Tom mentioned, yeah, I have almost 10 years sober. There are situations in my life where I know to call other people or sit down with somebody else, another human being. Is there something that should be discussed with somebody at once? You know, and I receive counsel from. I recognize today when that needs to happen, you know? And there's all these and I'm not going to tell anybody that their experience is wrong, or if you do bounce everything off of your sponsor at 5 years sober, heck, man, whatever works for you. It's just kind of my experience. And if we plan on growing and continuing to grow, you know, we should eventually be able to make some decisions by ourselves. And Tom touched on it perfect, man. He said that it's morphed into this. You know, it's one of the first things my sponsor ever said to me is, Ben, if sponsors were perfect, we wouldn't need God. And like you hear things like a sponsor's job is to put your hand in the hand of God's and leave it there. Like eventually you develop that God consciousness, which for me means like if you're not into the whole God higher power thing, G-O-D, good orderly direction, think about it as I've had enough practice, I can now consciously figure it out on my own what needs to be done through practice of working a program, taking an inventory of your behaviors and yourself, how to make situations right, you know, and developing those skills so that you become an independent person, you know. And lastly, I'll touch on this part since I'm kind of still going. I think, and this is my personal opinion based off of my experience, I think there's a lot of misconceptions from what I've seen, especially in 12-step, like give it up to your higher power, go to your sponsor. Step 10, actually, out of a very popular book in recovery, literally says, I'm going to quote this, got it in front of me, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So like, will is a plan, you know, and basically willpower is the power to execute that plan. But, you know, in the beginning of getting sober, if you look at a 12-step program, we're giving up our will. A lot of people miss the fact that on step 10, there's actually instructions that you get your will back because you've learned how to use it properly. You've learned how to plan properly through going through the other steps that work on your coping skills, your ability to take inventory of yourself, how to take corrective measures when you have screwed up, because we do mess up. We're all human, you know. So it's developing these skills and these principles and being able to apply them.
I like what you said about God conscious or good orderly direction. And I think for people that have a hard time understanding the whole concept of spirituality, or maybe they don't buy into the idea of higher power or anything like that, I think a good way to put that is also just having a clear conscience and knowing that the decision that I'm about to make, my conscience is going to be clear regardless of the outcome. You know, and really, I think one of the biggest points that when we get sober, I feel like people can really gauge their quality of sobriety when they can actually look at themselves and say, I can make a decision for myself. I have a clear enough conscience about myself that whatever the outcome, I am going to be okay with it. And I think it's unfortunate, you know, that some people, they don't thrive in that and they don't have that. They have that codependent relationship with other people and just feel this inherent need to bounce things off of people. And I reference this a lot, and I've never, I didn't come up with it myself, but I don't know who came up with it, but I believe in it through and through of the failing forward, you know, and understanding that through recovery, through sobriety, no matter the amount of time that we have, we are going to fail in multiple aspects of our lives. And we have to be able to allow that stuff to happen. Now, hopefully, failing doesn't mean relapse. But looking at everything and every decision that we make, and if it doesn't, if the outcome isn't ultimately what we wanted it to be, or if we didn't, it didn't go the way that we thought that it would, we have to be able to look at that as an opportunity to learn, to grow. And we can't put ourselves in a position to where we can, the outcome wasn't the way that we wanted, so we could just blame somebody else. You know, this didn't turn out to, I didn't take that job and I knew I should have taken that job. And you know what? And then they ultimately, what do? They'll place the blame on their sober supports or their sponsor. My sponsor said I shouldn't have taken that job. My sponsor said I shouldn't have gone to see my grandfather. And here he just passed away 2 weeks ago. I never got to see him again. You know, stuff like that. When we give our sponsor, we give our sober supports too much power in our lives when it's good in the beginning. But we have to get to that point where we're able to make these decisions for ourselves. And for me, it's a very important factor because it's part of growth. And if we can't allow ourselves to make these decisions and we can't allow ourselves to accept the outcomes, then what the hell is the point in being sober? At that point, I'm just going to allow drugs and alcohol to make the decisions for me. And I'm just going to blame drugs and alcohol for the outcome that comes down the pipeline, whether it be good or bad.
I just thought of a really good example. So this actually did happen at Rock. So we have a position basically that's a house manager. Very, very common thing with sober living homes, et cetera. But generally speaking, when you have an individual who has excelled in their recovery, they're doing what they need to do. They meet certain criteria. They've been sober long enough. On occasion, we will appoint somebody a house manager. And we had a situation where an individual who was doing very well in his recovery, you know, asked us if he could be a house manager for us. We told him yes, you know, and basically his sponsor's sponsor told him that his sponsor had to drop him because he doesn't approve of anybody being a house manager for a treatment center. Like literally a sponsor's sponsor. It wasn't even his own sponsor that came up with the idea. It was a sponsor sponsor, like telling down the line, like, hey, you need to drop this guy. And here's the thing, man. This individual, you know, ended up taking the house manager position, saved money. He's now a couple years sober. He's got his own apartment. You know, ended up moving out. He did the house manager position for a short period of time. We never allow anybody to do it for extended periods of time. But it could be a short stop in somebody's recovery experience. And this individual has absolutely excelled. He ended up getting a new sponsor because his sponsor fired him for taking a house manager position for a treatment center, you know. And this individual said that he's glad he got fired because he got to have a new experience with a sponsor who didn't try to run every aspect of his life. And today this individual's doing absolutely incredible, has an incredible job. His recovery's super solid. You know, he's part of the fellowship. Like, he needed to be fired to have a better experience, it sounds like to me. You know, and these are just things I witnessed. And again, man, this isn't black and white. You know, I'm sure people listen to this podcast and disagree. I'm just sharing my experience, what we've seen. I do believe there are cases where this stuff can become detrimental.
I think one of the biggest points is that when our sponsor or sober supports or whoever the case is deny us the opportunity to have those experiences, then we need to reevaluate who we have as a sponsor or a sober support. And I say that very lightheartedly, because that doesn't mean, well, my sponsor isn't allowing me to have this experience of going out with this girl that I just met on Tinder 2 days ago. My sponsor can't, not allow me to have that experience. That's not what I'm talking about. You know, I'm talking about when we're in a position to where we have sober time and we have a clear conscience, we're spirit led. You know, we've seeked a lot of wisdom. We have a lot of people around us, a winning team around us. Then we're able to make decisions for ourselves. If we have people in our lives that prevent us from being able to have those experiences, we need to reevaluate who those people are. Because being sober is about having new experiences in life and in sobriety. And we can't just fall into this like bubble of, you know, like some people are like robots. They'll just, you know, okay, I'm going to go to this meeting and then I'm going to go to that meeting. And then my sponsor said, you know, it's like, that's not the way that this is supposed to be. We gain a new life. We gain a new everything in sobriety. And those come with good experiences, bad experiences, and everything in between.
You know, it's funny. This brings up another memory for me. I had about 3 years sobriety, and I'll never forget this phone call. I called my sponsor to basically just complain about stuff going on in my life. I don't know where I was going with it, but I called him to complain. And he literally says to me, "Ben, we're at this point. Why are you calling me? Go help somebody." And basically he was saying to me like, dude, take everything that you've learned and start applying it to some good. You know, there's a saying, the best way to get out of your shit is to jump into somebody else's, pardon my French. But that's exactly what he said to me, you know, and there does come that point where, again, hopefully it's developed into a situation where your sponsor's not always going to be there. What if they don't answer the phone? You know, you've got to be able to learn to think for yourself. And I think it's really important for sponsors to also recognize, like, I have to let these people have these experiences, which has already been said. And let me just tell you real quick that, you know, and I do my best to practice what I'm talking about. And, you know, when my sponsees call me with an issue and they basically say, you know, they're looking for a suggestion, I have them explain the situation to the best of their ability. And I say, you know, if it was me, with my knowledge and my experience, that this is what I would probably do. But I always end like this in some way, shape, or form. But at the end of the day, the decision is yours. You can do what you would like with the suggestion that I gave you, that I don't even know that I would call it a suggestion. I'm more of like, this is what I would do if it was me. Now you go ahead and do with that information what you want. You know, and I'm not going to scold somebody if they do the opposite of what I say, because there's so many great experiences where I'm like, hey man, this is what I would do. Do what you want. They go back, they do the opposite of what I would have done. They come back and they're like, you're right. I'm like, and how much did you learn from that experience? Are you ever going to do that again? Hopefully not. You know, most of the time they're like, no, I'm never doing that one again. I'm like, well, good. You had to learn, man. You have to put your hand on a hot stove.
Yeah, it's just like having children. It really is. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of Real Recovery Talk. Thank you for tuning in again. Go to realrecoverytalk.com. There you will find every single episode that we have ever released. And don't forget to reach out to us, Tom at realrecoverytalk.com, Ben at realrecoverytalk.com, and leave us a nice review if you would so be inclined. That is it. We will see y'all later.
You've been listening to Real Recovery Talk with Tom Conrad. If you'd like to have a confidential conversation about your specific situation, give Tom a call on his direct line at 561-220-7163. Or if you'd prefer, you can chat with Tom live at realrecoverytalk.com. As always, if this show is a benefit to you, please give it a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or wherever you discover your favorite podcasts. Thank you for being part of our mission to bring hope and healing to our loved ones struggling with addiction, as well as wisdom and comfort to those of us around them.